You're listening to SBS News.
Kiyoma Takahashi has finally found a safe place to live in Australia, in a relatively earthquake-free zone. He moved to Sydney 3 years ago, in large part due to the 2011 Japanese quake and tsunami. The tsunami was triggered by a magnitude 9 earthquake, one of the biggest on record, and it went on to inundate over 500,000 square kilometres of land. Nearly 500,000 people were evacuated, 16,000 reported missing, and more than 15,000 people were killed. Two of those were Mr. Takahashi's grandparents. 10 years later, he has vivid memories of that day.
My grandpa and grandma were missing, so we had to visit the morgue for 3 months to find them. And I saw other bodies there. We had to go to the morgue every day. There were some bodies there that were disfigured. I went there with my father. That was really shocking to me. We had to do that every day for 3 months.
The quake struck at a shallow depth of 30 kilometres on the floor of the Western Pacific Ocean. It generated a 15-metre tsunami with a 30-metre coastal surge. The carnage along Japan's east coast sparked an international response. The head of Australia's rescue team in 2011 thinks the disaster was one of the worst in the modern world. Robert McNeil, now Assistant Commissioner at New South Wales Fire and Rescue Service, says the minus 15 degree conditions meant there was little chance of finding people still alive.
Well, we'll go in there not purely for our objective, which are urban search and rescue teams there for, which is to rescue people. So we will go in there to give humanitarian aid to the Japanese and to walk alongside our other emergency services workers in Japan. And that's one of the things that really resonates, is that regardless of culture and language, I do find that firefighters, emergency service workers, when they come together, it's just seamless, you know. We know what to do regardless of the breaks in culture and language.
Assistant Commissioner McNeil still cherishes that camaraderie. He found the symbolism of Australian and Japanese rescuers working side by side immensely powerful, even in the face of so much destruction.
But the stoicism of the Japanese people was amazing. And even further to that, if you need to take something that's enlightening out of this whole experience, my grandfather in 1942 to 1946 were fighting the Japanese. So to me, since that point of time, the sheer fact that countries go to help each other is a great example for the rest of the world and hopefully something we can aspire to worldwide.
2011 was a taxing year on the rescue team. Some of them had just come from Christchurch, which had been devastated by a major earthquake less than 3 weeks earlier. Robert McNeil and his team arrived in Minami-san Riku and vividly remembers the crows circling the city.
It haunts you, you know, and the aftershocks and the smell. It's had a very distinct smell about it. There were 17,000 people in that town. There was 15,000 missing when we got there.
That trauma also affected a generation of children. One 19-year-old student spent 7 months in Tokyo waiting to travel to the most affected region to offer support. Now, she and Kiyoma Takahashi are part of the Japan Club of Sydney's Rainbow Project. Its aim was to bring Japanese children to Sydney for a break. As the children grew older, the project coordinated trips for the young people to come and study English. Misaki Ito says those initial visits to the disaster zone gave her the confidence to move to Sydney and eventually volunteer with the Rainbow Project.
I went there and just realised that anything could happen tomorrow. I listened to lots of people, like the local people as well, and then they say to me, like, anything could happen tomorrow. Do what you want to do.
The tsunami waves also triggered a major nuclear accident at the Fukushima Daiichi power plant, forcing the evacuation of tens of thousands of people. In Australia, this accident brought pain to First Nations people in the Northern Territory. Some uranium used at the Fukushima plant came from the Ranger uranium mine on the traditional owner's country. Dr. Tilman Ruff, co-founder of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, explains this sorrow.
I think that's something that Indigenous people with such long and close and deep association with country and so embedded in their being, the sense of responsibility for what happens on that country, what happens to people on that country, and what happens to the products of that country, deeply distressing for them.
10 years after the triple disaster, the east coast of Japan has largely been rebuilt. People have relocated to higher ground and there are more open spaces for water to flow. But even with this infrastructure rebuilt, Dr. Hitomi Nakanishi from the University of Canberra says in some ways people have not recovered.
Recovery of infrastructure is not recovery. It's people still very much, I think, mentally influenced. And then there are still many people who haven't been able to return to their home. So it's, I think this is still a long way to actually recover. But the good thing is that this infrastructure was developed and people are getting to normal life.
One message Dr. Nakanishi does emphasize on this 10-year anniversary of the disaster is that the thousands of lives lost must not be forgotten. Tyson Cusey, SBS News.